You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks is now less than a month away, and on that date, the memorial to the victims will be officially unveiled. Amy Waldman covered the aftermath of the attacks when she was a reporter for the New York Times, and now she's written The Submission, a novel that imagines what would have happened if the jury charged with choosing a design for the memorial had picked one by a Muslim. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased it has brought Amy Waldman to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on all the great reviews.
Thank you.
The winner of the actual competition was Michael Arad, an Israeli-American. Was his design seen as controversial?
I think there are aspects of it that have been controversial in terms of just the families mostly negotiating what they wanted to see in a memorial.
And that's a large part of what you deal with in this book, what the families want to see. Nobody seems to agree.
Right. Because
did you think, what if he was a Muslim?
No, it started, I think, before or around the time he was being selected. I was actually talking to a friend who's an artist about memorial competitions, and we started talking about Maya Lin and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and how a piece of the backlash to her was her being Asian American. And that got me thinking, what would the equivalent be for 9/11? And that's where the idea came from.
So this was already way before the controversy over the proposed Park 51 Community Center, the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, broke out.
Yes, definitely. I first had the idea in late 2003, so it was quite a bit.
But when that happened, you must have thought, gee, I'm on the right track here.
I did think that, yes. And I also thought, suddenly, my original track is quite familiar in certain ways, and so how can I maybe deviate more from the news than I otherwise would have had to.
In the course of reporting something as big as the attacks of 9/11, did you find yourself wanting to tell the stories behind the story, to explore the emotions and the motives of the people involved? Can you do that as a journalist?
I think as a journalist, it's as hard to go deep inside someone's head as you can as a novelist, since you have the freedom as a novelist to make it up. And I think as a journalist, you're very reliant on the stories people tell you, even what they're telling you about their feelings and thoughts. And some of that is there are many layers to people that they do and don't want to reveal. And some of it is just people don't always have the language for what they're actually feeling and experiencing. And so I think in a novel, you can start to grope for that kind of language.
Well, I remember after 9/11 speaking to some literary critics, and they said it's too soon to write about 9/11. Poets were all saying it's too soon. But we've had these books by Don DeLillo, John Updike, Jonathan Safran Foer, and many others. Is it too hard to ignore as well?
I don't think artists can ignore it. I mean, and you actually had Galway Kinnell, the poet, wrote a great poem quite early on, I think, about 9/11. I think we will make efforts, some better than others. We may stumble, but I think it's way too big to ignore.
Well, they talked about other things that happened in the aftermath. How important is the design of the memorial to ordinary Americans?
I don't know. I mean, they're expecting enormous number of visitors, so I think it will have resonance in that sense. And I think as part of the process of having more than a blank space to look at when people come, because so many people who come to New York now do go to visit that site. But I don't know how important it will be. We'll see once it opens.
For years, people would stop me on the street and ask me how to get to Ground Zero. And me being the snarky New Yorker that I am, I said, why do you want to go? There's just a big hole in the ground.
That must have been a popular response, I'm sure.
They looked at me like I was crazy. You take readers inside the jury selection process and paint detailed portraits of the jury members, especially Claire Burwell, the lone widow on the jury, who represents the families. Did you know any of the real jurors?
I did not, actually. And I made a conscious decision not to seek them out, partly because somehow as a novelist I felt a little bit uncomfortable about asking them to offer up their experience. But also I needed my imagination to be free to work without feeling too faithful to their stories or too worried whether I might offend them somehow. So I steered clear of that.
You open with the jurors deciding between two finalists, The Garden and The Void. Can you describe them to us?
Sure. So the garden is a walled garden. The walls are white, and the names of the victims are inscribed on the walls. And then the garden is divided into four, essentially, by two canals with a pavilion at the center for contemplation. So it's peaceful. And then in addition to the living trees that are in the garden, there are steel trees that are made from scraps salvaged from the buildings that went down. The void, in contrast, is kind of this tall, I think one character describes it as a gash against the sky. It's this giant black slab in the middle of a pool with the names inscribed on it. So part of what the jury is arguing over is, what should a memorial do? Is it about healing? Is it about reminding you of what happened? And so on.
Well, part of the controversy over Maya Lin's Vietnam memorial was that it was abstract. A lot of people wanted sculptures of soldiers.
Right.
And now we're past that, obviously. Nobody was calling for that sort of thing here. Michael Arad's actual winning entry is called Reflecting Absence, and it consists of twin reflecting pools where the towers once stood. Were you trying to incorporate some aspects of his design into your two fictional designs?
Not at all. I was certainly aware of his design, but definitely just conjured them from
is
my
it, imagination. Is it ironic that Maya Lin was on the 9/11 memorial jury?
I don't think it's ironic. It actually makes sense. Is it ironic for me? It was a little bit interesting in writing because I didn't want to write her into the book because she's a living person, and yet I didn't want to ignore her. So
no, I just meant that her design had been so controversial, and now she's
right.
Part of the establishment.
Well, she really defined the language of what a memorial should be, and nobody questions that anymore.
In the novel, it's a blind competition with the winner's name revealed to the jurors only after the final vote. Do you know if that's how the real competition worked?
That is how the Vietnam Veterans Memorial competition worked, to the point that when they finally looked up her name, they were shocked to find out she was a Yale College student. This competition, it was mostly blind, and then they narrowed it down, I think, to 8 or 9 finalists, and then allowed them to revise their designs and then met with each of them. So it was semi-blind, I would say.
And Michael Arad was then an unknown designer. In this case, Claire, the widow, is in favor of the garden, while the artists on the jury want the void. And Claire prevails, and the winner is revealed to be someone named Muhammad Khan. Now, that's a pretty common name in the Muslim world,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Very common.
He's called Mo to his friends. He's a talented young architect who works with a firm headed by a big-name architect. For someone like him, would winning this type of architect make his career as it did for Maya Lin?
It definitely would. I mean, part of the challenge of being an architect is that you toil often under much bigger names, often for very low pay, for many years before you get the autonomy and power and clout to really build what you want to build. So for Mo, who is, you know, around 40 or close to 40 in the novel, to win this competition, it would change everything for him.
A week after 9/11, he's questioned at an airport, and later on when his firm sends him to Kabul to bid on a contract for a new American embassy there, the other architects are suspicious of him. Do experiences like that change his attitude toward his religion?
Yes. I mean, part of what the novel is about is him, just as many Americans were trying to figure out what Islam is. Mo, as an American but also as a Muslim, is trying to figure out, what is my religion? And these experiences are changing him. Partly it's as someone who sees himself as secular, very not religious, to suddenly have it thrust to the core of his identity is shocking to him. So he's grappling with that, and he is becoming more bitter in a way toward his country for the way it's reacting toward him.
I mentioned that you'd covered the story for The Times, but you also have been the co-chief of the South Asia Bureau at the New York Times. How much did you draw upon that experience for writing this book? People you met there?
I think there's no one in the book who specifically comes out of that experience, but I think it was very influential in a number of ways. I mean, everything from I visited a lot of Islamic gardens when I was living in South Asia. I met every kind of Muslim that you could meet of every political and religious stripe. And so capturing that diversity, understanding a lot of the debates within Islam, which is partly what is happening in the book as well, that definitely exposed me to that.
Opponents of the garden point out that Muslims have historically built mosques in places they've conquered Is that true?
In certain places, it is true, yes, but it's also become a overheated trope, I would say.
And then they read Muslim influences into the design and declare that the garden is really meant to be a martyr's paradise.
Right, right. And Mo digs in his heels and says he's not going to answer questions about that. And that's really where a lot of the tension in the novel comes from.
So a design that seemed neutral at first, in fact, some of the jurors deemed it kind of bland, becomes politicized once the identity of the designer becomes public.
Right. And so he keeps saying, you didn't have these questions before you knew who I was. And other people keep saying, you still have to assuage our fears. And so partly I was interested in just not just how we fear people, but how we fear symbols and what they might mean or represent.
Well, it kind of defeats the whole purpose of doing a blind jury in the first place. But as you mentioned, Mo refuses to help his cause by denouncing the attacks. Why wouldn't he be more defend himself a bit more? It really, you know, I mean, this is an important moment in his career.
Right. Some of that I want to leave for a reader to think about without spelling it out. And I think some of it he makes clear, you know, in his answers to the question, which is, you would not ask this of a non-Muslim. I'm an American like everybody else, so why should I have to answer your questions?
But Michael Arad had to make many adjustments to his design in response to various complaints from family members and politicians. Why is it so difficult to satisfy everyone?
Well, if you think about it, you're trying to make in what in some ways is a work of art in a very political context. And so you have so many constituencies who believe they own, in a sense, this piece of land. And sometimes because they have the remains of their family members there, other times because of how I think we all experienced the attack. And so that sense of ownership and the competing claims between people who are certain they are right makes it very difficult to resolve. And I was interested in that. How does a democracy then reach consensus around these claims?
Especially in a place like New York, because some of the other family members, for example, Sean Gallagher, whose brother was a firefighter who died in the attacks, and Asma is a Bangladeshi woman whose husband, a janitor, was in the towers and also died that day. They live in Brooklyn, not far from each other.
Right.
And one in Kensington, one in Ditmas Park.
Mm-hmm.
But they live worlds apart.
Right. And that's New York, as you know, is that's what it's like, is there are worlds within worlds brushing up against each other, passing each other on the street, and yet knowing very little about each other. And so I was interested in that. And then also all these people carrying their grief around, and what does their grief entitle them to? How does their grief reshape them? What happens when they have their griefs clash, in essence?
Sean Gallagher forms a group called the Memorial Support Committee, and he teams up with a group called Save America from Islam, run by a woman who's hoping to put her kids through college on the donations she receives. So people come out of the woodwork at times like this, in some cases, to profit from the tragedy. But there are people who seem to be totally sincere. There is a woman who started a blog that grew out of the whole controversy over the Ground Zero Mosque, who has risen to a certain amount of prominence. And then there is another blogger who I gather inspired the Norwegian terrorist, or whatever we're going to call that man, who says, well, I was just protesting the mosque.
Right. You have all of these things going on. There's absolutely an industry that's risen up in the wake of 9/11, but there are also sincere emotions and feelings. And one thing I was interested in the book is even liberals, I think, sometimes don't account for those feelings and the place of emotion in these debates. And so, you know, even in that character, I think sometimes you can have within the same person many of these things going on, both profiteering and sincere ideologies.
And you also deal with the journalists. You have a character who works for the Daily News and moves to the Post when the news refuses to print a certain scoop. You must have had fun with that character. Have you ever worked for a tabloid?
I have not. I have not. But I have had friends who have. And I did have fun with her. And I found her intriguing and sort of appealingly scrappy in certain ways when she's not being extremely manipulative. And I felt like she and Mo shared a certain ambition that was interesting to me, the way their drive and the way their work takes centrality sometimes above human relations was very similar in certain ways.
Michio Kakutani gave you a rave review today and said that this has more verisimilitude, more political resonance, and way more heart than Tom Wolfe's 1987 bestseller, The Bonfire of the Vanities. But many people have compared this to that book because of its focus on politics, racism, and social class, and its satire of liberal New Yorkers. Do you like the comparison?
I guess so. I have to be honest. I read that book when it came out, which was, I think, over 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago now. So at the time, I thought it was a great read. I think it's a very influential book. I think it really did help define a certain kind of social novel, especially an urban novel that tries to look at the city and how its parts work together. So yes, in that sense, I'm flattered.
And you also would hope that the submission would sell as well as that book.
Of course,
and be made
yes.
into a movie. So you've given up journalism completely now?
I wouldn't say completely, but I am much more fiction focused right now. I used to have a million nonfiction story ideas, and now usually when I think of something, it's imaginary.
The Submission is Amy Waldman's first novel, but obviously not her last. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.